Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perot, and I'm very pleased to have in the studio with us for her monthly visit, Jane Paul from Early On. She is the Parent Education Coordinator. Jane, Happy New Year, and thanks for being here.
Happy New Year to you, too. Thanks for having us back.
The response that we've gotten from these interviews that we've been doing with you has been nothing but positive. People seem to be taking a lot out of them, and one of the things that people wonder is what we're talking about next, and you're here today to talk about a couple of things, aren't you?
I am. I was chatting with some of our facilitators that do the playgroups, and we thought this might be a good time to talk about being outside.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we're into this cold, wet winter, at least we're not in Newfoundland, right?
No, I mean, true.
We could be digging out from a very deep place in there. So
now, when you say playing outside and being outside, what types of activities are you referring to?
So I think really it's about what we get out of from being outside, whether we're just outside for a walk, whether we're outside for play. And I guess I'm thinking more about what used to be termed risky play, and now we call it adventurous play or challenging play. Because as soon as we say risky,
yeah,
Everybody puts up their hands and says, no, you know, that's not a safe thing to do.
Yeah, like risky play, I can't think of anything off the top of my head that, you know, other than things like dodgeball and stuff like that when I was a kid.
Dodgeball is just dangerous and deadly.
Yeah. That is true. It all depends on the ball you use.
This is very true. Very true. Risky play is basically play that provides opportunities for some challenge. It allows kids to test their limits and explore their boundaries. And this is when they learn about risk assessment. This is when they find out that it's okay to jump off a rock that's a foot tall, but it's not okay to jump off the laundry stand that's 5 feet tall.
Gotcha.
Right? So it's play that provokes uncertainty, and it tends to be a very physical play. So there's actually 8 categories for risky play in there. And they go from play that have to do with great heights. So when you think of kids climbing trees,
yeah,
right? So they're up high. That's one of the categories of risky play. High speed. And this time of year, I mean, think toboggans, mm-hmm, right? Toboggans, GTs, heading down that hill at breakneck speed. That's a type of risky play. Play with real tools. So we do this a lot, you know, things like saws, jackknives, hammers, things that are real and deemed sort of dangerous, mm-hmm, for kids. That's another type of risky play that really helps them challenge and test their limits and build that sense of confidence, right? And that sense of being able to actually do things and sort of be in charge of your world.
Now, you're not saying give your kid a saw to go play with.
I'm not saying give your kid a saw to go play with, but surprisingly enough, in it are play groups. Now, you've got to remember that this time of year, most of our kids, you know, the oldest ones are probably 3. Maybe we have a few 4-year-olds there in January, but everybody else is usually in school, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we actually have kids as young as 2 using real saws in playgroup. Mm. Now, I mean, we certainly don't just hand them to them. You want to give them, you want to teach them, you want to model for them, you want to work with them. But you would be surprised at how young a child can use a hammer and a saw. We have stumps in some of our playgroups that I'm sure have 200 nails pounded into them. You know, at first they used to pound them in and pull them all out and put them back in the box. Not anymore. Now that they're used to it, they pound them in everywhere. Great physical, you know, hand-eye coordination, builds strength and muscles and dexterity. But on top of all that, it really heightens their senses when they're actually able to do things with real tools, or whether they're up in a great height, or whether they're going, you know, a fast speed. It uses all their senses, and it gives them a sense of confidence and accomplishment. One of our facilitators, actually right now as we speak, she's out at Tay Valley Reflections on the trail, and she has a group called Outdoor Explorers. And again, these are kids all, you know, before the age of school. So parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles and caregivers, they come out and they just go for a walk on the trail and explore what's there. It's all done at the child's pace, right? So it's not a, you know, a strenuous hike.
Mm-hmm.
But she was telling me a story from a recent time out there of a little guy who was walking along, and about 10 minutes into the walk, found a tree across the trail. Well, he ended up spending the next 45 minutes on this tree.
Really?
You know, and everybody was saying, well, you know, we should go ahead. Well, no, let's just slow down, Joyce says, and see what happens. Well, he started off, because he's quite young, he started off just by climbing on the tree. And what an accomplishment to actually be up off the ground on a tree. And the branch bounces a bit, right?
Yeah.
And so they just watched him for a little while and they were chatting away. And next thing they know, sure enough, he's bouncing on this. And then he's lying on it. And then he's kneeling on it. And then he's climbing onto the next one. And as his comfort level rises and he feels good about what he's doing, you know, he's gaining these skills of confidence and self-assuredness. And he just was doing more and more and more with this tree till, you know, at the end of more than a half an hour, he's not only bouncing on it, he's on the very top limb. I'm the king of the castle, you know, just quite something. So that's the kind of stuff we're talking about.
Okay. And you said there's 8 categories.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a couple more. Rough and tumble play is one of them. So think play fighting.
Yeah.
Right. When we want to toss each other around. And, or even, do you remember as a kid standing at the top of a hill and spinning round and round and round and round till you fell down?
Yes.
Or rolling down the grassy hill till you know, your eyes were just going crazy in your head.
A favorite of ours was King of the Hill, especially in the winter, you know, because you had that added cushion, if you will, but you know, just someone standing at the top of the hill and everybody wants to be that person, and you pull and push and that sort of, not too violently or anything like that. It was a lot of fun.
But when you do that, that's when you learn, that's when this risk assessment comes in, that's when you find out how hard you push and what happens, right? So it teaches you, oh, I can do this, and it knocks them down the hill. Or if I do this, oh, wait, that's way too hard because that child got hurt, right? Or that child started to cry. So it builds empathy and it builds that sense of what's okay and what's not okay and where your limits are when it comes to those types of things. And of course, in this day and age, everybody's worried that someone is going to get hurt. Everybody's worried that someone's going to sue. Everybody's worried that a cut, you know, is a horrible thing. But we need to put some of those fears back on a shelf behind us and keep an eye. And certainly we don't want anyone to get, you know, physically hurt in a bad way. Mm-hmm. But bumps and bruises and scrapes are a part of childhood. And if you don't allow kids to be a little bit hands-on, then how do they learn where those limits are?
Yeah.
Right. And so it's sort of a gray area. And that's why it was called risky play.
Interesting.
Right. And now, again, like I say, we're trying to give it a better spin because we know that this is a really important thing for kids to do. It's where they learn how to deal with challenges. And that transfers over to challenges in real life, too.
I think, right? It would teach them a lot of respect for each other when you're talking about that so-called rough play, for objects like a saw or a hammer, knowing the damage that it can do if used improperly, and certainly you know, just for their environment in general.
Yeah. And you need that sense. And I think that outdoor play, you know, when you're talking about that kind of empathy and cause and effect in the world, outdoor play is great because there tends to be a little less parental interference or adult interference in there. We tend to give them a little more leeway. You know, we don't let them climb to the top of the bookshelf in the living room, but they can certainly climb to the top of the slide or play structure, you know, or the bouncy tree across the trail. So we tend to step back and let them figure out their limits. I mean, we're still there to make sure, you know, that nothing untowards happens. We don't want anybody truly hurt. But when you have a few bumps and when you are running fast and you bump into someone and they fall down, you know, that's when your empathy kicks in. That's when you begin to realize, oh, that wasn't appropriate in this situation. I have to go out around people. And that's how they learn all those little social skills that are so important in the world.
Really interesting stuff, that's for sure.
So just a couple more categories in there.
Yeah, please.
One of them is being lost. So, or the feeling of being lost. So can you think of a childhood game where you might go away and hide and feel lost from the world?
Oh, like hide and seek?
Absolutely, right? Hide and seek. And the opposite of that, sardines, where one person goes and hides and then everybody has to find them.
Oh, neat.
That's a great game.
I've never heard it called sardines. I don't think I've ever heard of that.
Yeah, that was one we played a lot. And it's tricky to find a hiding spot where you can cram 10 people into, though, right? And still not be found. So exploring alone out in the woods, and again, you know, kids love to hide under tables in forts. That's a part of risky play as well. That feeling of uncertainty. Am I going to be found? Am I going to be lost? And play with impact. I mean, we see this all the time, kids running around or driving around in the little tykes cars and smashing into each other, right?
Yeah.
Or taking a rock or a snowball and throwing it against something and see it impact and change, right? So that's another type of risky play in there. And again, talk about risk assessment, right? Where is it okay to do that? You know, what is okay to throw? What is not okay to throw? You know, do we throw at trees? Do we throw at people? All those little things that kids need to figure out to be able to survive in the world, all those social rules. And the last one is vicarious play. So these are the kids that tend to stand off to the side and watch other kids doing risky play, right? And that's how you get to know what the possibilities are. Maybe you're not quite ready to join in yet, but I can stand back and watch you guys play fight. And then when I'm ready, then I can take part in that kind of play as well.
It's like a form of research for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And also so, they get to determine what they like.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And I mean, that's a big part of everything in life. If you like it and enjoy it, your comfort level goes up. So then you tend to stay at it and do it and master it and, you know, try harder at what you're doing because it's enjoyable, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic.
So where do we go from that? I guess, I mean, just to let people know too, we do have outdoor things going on. A little bit harder to convince people that outdoor play is a wonderful thing at this time of year.
Yeah.
Especially with the great big dump of snow we've just had and very short-legged children that we deal with,
but
right?
The snow is so much fun. Some of my happiest memories as a kid playing outside were in the snow.
So what kinds of things did you like to do in the snow?
Well, we used to like to wrestle because, you know, you'd find a nice area of snow that was not, too disturbed in the backyard or in a field or something like that. And, you know, you just go and you'd have fun with it because the impact of the ground wasn't as hard and
right. And
that. We loved tobogganing. We used to have snowball fights. And then part of it, too, was my brother and I were very creative people. We used to love building forts.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and when you're active out there in maybe not this cold, but when you're out there in the cold, and you're playing, you warm up and you don't even realize it.
You
right?
do. It tends to be a much more active type of play, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the important things for people just starting out. Remember that you do have to dress for the weather.
Absolutely.
Right? Layers, the and word my, is layers.
Yeah. And my parents gave us the snow pants. We had the whole nine yards. We were ready to go for a deep space walk by the time we walked outside the house, you know?
And you kind of looked like astronauts
exactly.
toddling out
exactly.
there.
Exactly. But we had a blast. And, you know, I think that we're very fortunate to live where we do live so that we can experience that kind of play as children. And then in the summer, it's a whole different boat.
Yeah, for sure. Although some of the things we use in summer transfer over nicely. We talk a lot about making what is termed now as a mud kitchen, which is just, everything that you can haul out, buckets and things for making potions and, you know, making twig stew and that kind of stuff. That works in the winter, too. You know, you can stir up all sorts of things and create things and mold things and they stay together, you know, and then chop them apart and all of those things as well. But you're right. You do need to be ready and, you know, keep the kids active and start slow. If you've got kids that haven't, you know, aren't used to this, then go out just for a short time and then come back in.
Yeah.
Right. You want it to be a fun experience in there. The added value was I bet you guys slept well.
I was gonna say
you came back in.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I can remember being out there for in my head what seems like hours on end, but now, you know, as I think back now, you know, mom and dad would bring us in from time to time, whether it be for lunch or whatever, you know, we'd come in, get warmed up and so on in controlled bursts, if you
right.
will, you know,
right.
and it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of great value in that for sure.
Well, and I think one other thing that happens when we play outside is we have a sense of wonder. I mean, rather than being in a structured environment, it's a little more free flowing and, you know, you can do what you need to do and work on what you need to work on as far as skills. But that sense of wonder of being outside in something that's bigger and greater than you is really important. I mean, the science behind that, we know that when we look at screen time, and don't get me wrong, I love my technology and it's here to stay. But screen time, we know, has a very focused attention and it tends to lead to fatigue and stress. And when you're outside with what we call a soft wonder, and just, you know, when you go out there and go, oh, it's so quiet in the snow, or, you know, you're out in the trees and it's bigger and it's just less pressure, that type of wonder is really important, because that soft fascination, it reduces stress and fatigue, and it actually leads to pleasure in our bodies. And so that's something that I think helps with a lot of the mental health issues that we're dealing with today. You know, some cultures call it bathing in nature. There's something about doing that that actually changes the chemistry of our bodies to help us settle down and enjoy the world in a less stressful way.
Well, really interesting stuff as always, Jane. Was there anything that we didn't mention that you wanted to?
Just a couple of quick things, sure. Just to plug my own thing here.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of workshops coming up, and those are free. The first one is February the 5th, and it's here, right here in Perth at Stewart School in the evening, and it's Kids Have Stress Too. And we'll talk more about that wonder and soft fascination and how to help kids be mentally healthy with the stress in our world today. We also have our Triple P, which is our big sort of meat and potatoes workshop coming up. That's happening in Smith Falls at our center starting February the 11th, and it's 5 weeks. And then in Carlton Place coming up in the end of February on the 20th and the 27th, it's a two-night workshop. We have Tips for Twos, and it tends to be one of our well-attended ones because everybody has a challenge with those early years, that sort of 18 months to 3.5. So those are all coming up. You can call into the office and ask about them, or you can go on to crowlanark.com and find all our playgroups and all our parent education stuff. Or you can actually call into the office at 613-283-0095, and you can sign up for our electronic newsletter and get all that information delivered right to your device. Fantastic. So all those things are coming up.
Great. Well, that's wonderful. Jane, thank you so much for coming in today. It's always a joy to speak with you about these things and go down
memory lane. Always a pleasure to be with you,
too. It's nice. I get to go down memory lane a bit, too, as you do this. So fantastic. We look forward to speaking with you next month.
All right. See you then.
Now, tomorrow on In Focus, we welcome local sports historian and co-founder of the Perth and District Sports Hall of Fame, Tim Zander, and Perth Blue Wings owner, Michael McLean. We'll talk about a new book Tim is working on with Michael's help, chronicling the history of the Blue Wings. I'm Bob Perreault. Have a wonderful afternoon.